everybody, I'm Dan, I'm an alcoholic, and it works better if you unmute yourself. Yes. Then again, if there's a way to mute me later, you might want to. So I was going through, I was like, 10, 11, 12, I got the books out again, even though I lived those on a daily basis, I kind of like wanted to go through it. And as soon as this meeting's over tonight, I'll be going down to the club for the 7:30, 12, 12, 12 meeting. And I don't know what step they're on, but it's been part of my life. So going to step meetings and going over traditions and has been a big part of my life because I'm a quick forgetter. I sometimes forget like what my life has been like. And I'm gonna kind of start off with step 10 and 10, 11, and 12 beyond. That's what I do every day. That's a part of my life every day. That's the reason I believe that that after God revealed those to me. And I like to say that God revealed those to me when I walked in the program. No. I like to say that He revealed them to me in 1 year, 2 years. No. God's revealed the steps to me when He knew I was ready to accept them. And I look at step 10 and I worked step 10. I went over with my sponsor. I started, kind of looking through and knowing what I needed to do at the time, but I won't lie. Early in sobriety, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, man, I was still, and I said this, I mentioned this earlier to my wife and about my behavior of having the ability to, somebody to be mad at me, telling me something I did wrong. And by the time I would get done, they would be apologizing to me for it. And that doesn't work well when you're working the steps. What that does is that rationalization holds me back from seeing the truth about myself and having the ability to continue to take personal inventory, to admit promptly when I was wrong. And, even though I can remember, a lot of you guys have heard some of my stories about this, but, one of the moments in my life that really showed me exactly where I was on my 10th step happened when I probably 4 or 5 years in the program, and I was in my first teaching job, and I'm feeling pretty good about myself. I did well in school. I got this job. I got kind of offered the job, and I took the job. And I can remember there was this teacher who was there for a while, and she had about 10 years of teaching. And then one day, she came up to me about 4 months into my teaching, and she said, "You're not doing that right. That's not how you should be doing it. You should be doing this and this and this. You're not doing it right." So I do what all good people in the program for 4 or 5 years do. I get all the other young teachers together at different times, and I tell her what she said about me, and she's probably saying that about you too. And so I do what I call it Frankenstein the Billagers. I get all the Billagers, I tell her what she did and how she's doing this, and they all light the torches. They're like, they're with me. And we are climbing the mountain to kill the monster, to say mean things and be mean about this teacher who hurt my feelings, telling me what I was doing wrong. But the problem is, about halfway up the mountain, this fellowship, man, it ruins you. Halfway up the mountain, I realized she was right. The things that she was saying about me were correct. But see, here's the problem where I am in my that time, my sobriety, my time, my 10th step. I now know what she did was right and what I was doing was wrong. But the problem was, because of fear, because of selfishness and dishonest, I did not have the ability to turn around to the villagers, to the other teachers and the teacher's assistants, and tell them that she was right. So we burned the monster anyways. And I felt bad about that for a long time, that I did that. And I'd like to tell you, after that moment, of realizing that I was wrong. That the next time I had to deal with a situation where I needed to do a 10th step, that I did it just the right way. It took me a while. There was a lot of villagers. That's what I always did, because a lot of it had to do with the fact that I didn't have that foundation in my program. Even though I'd worked the steps at that first part of my life, I had not made that connection with my higher power at that time. And because I didn't have that, I didn't have that feeling inside, that fear was still controlling me. It might not have showed as much to other people, because I could do enough positive things and tell you enough good things that you would think I was all right. But I'm going to tell you right now, what changes your life for doing the 10th step? What changes it? You know, I believe that God gave me probably hundreds of chances to do a correct 10th step, to make that direct amends. But I wasn't capable of doing it yet. But I can tell you right now, that I remember the day that I had the villagers going and we were climbing the mountain. And yeah, I realized that person was right. The things that they said were correct. And I remember turning around and saying to everybody, I was wrong. It was me. I did this. That moment in sobriety changed my life. That single little moment, God had put those opportunities for me to do that hundredfold. But I didn't understand the 10th step until that moment. Like, what can the 10th step do for you? How will it change you? I'm going to tell you right now, at that moment when I turned around to those people and said, I was wrong, it was me. Was there fear involved? Yeah. Did I do it? Yeah. And because of that, I was able to continue to do that. It started to become part of my life on a daily basis, you know? And I'd like to say, you know, I'm doing it perfect or whatever. Early in sobriety, when I would work the 10th step, my 10th step for a number of years, and I don't know how you guys are and how I am, but my 10th step usually occurred at night before I'd go to bed. Every night before I'd go back to bed, I would look through my day. You know, and it's amazing how this program works, because at first, the weight was all, oh my God, why did I do that? Why did I say that to that person? What is wrong? And I'll be in my head, I'll be going, what's wrong with you? Why do you keep doing this? You know, but I would at least know that it was, and I knew that I had to make amends or whatever I had to do. And I would look through that at the end of the night. And the best part about this fellowship, if you stay sober and you continue to work in steps, and is to get to that point where you kind of don't have as many things that you've done wrong. You know, I mean, I'd be walking in the bedroom with a bushel basket, you know, of stupid stuff. And I got, and pretty soon it's getting down to like a little Walmart bag, you know, and I'm like, okay, I'll take that. And so it's not as bad, you know, but as I continue to work that 10th step, I can start to feel that pressure off of me, that fear off of me, you know, and I knew that I was starting to feel better, but it eventually, you know, I had to continue on. You know, when I finally did that 10th step, I really believe that was the initial beginning of my higher power opening him up in myself to me. Because see, I needed to do something on my part to say to God, okay, I'm ready. I'm ready for you to take me to the next part of my sobriety. I'm ready to do this. Here, let me turn around and admit I'm wrong in front of all these people and know that it's the right thing to do. Let me continue to start working this step. And you know, I think I've already mentioned the story because somebody said, hey, how about the Mount Laurel story? But that is the moment, you know, as we're going into step 11, you know, we saw the prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Well, guess what? You know, I didn't have, for all those years, even though I had worked all the steps, you know, I talked about it before, the speed that my sponsor wanted me to work on, the speed that I wanted to work on, the speed God had me work on. And that moment when I had the Mount Laurel moment, and I realized that God had me see people for 5 years in the fellowship, see you people for the very first time, you know, and everything that you talked about, your feelings. So in order to have that relationship, in order to have to do a true 10th step, I had to have that connection with my higher power. Without that connection, I don't see the feeling and understand the feelings of the things I'm doing to you, the feelings I'm doing to other people, what the repercussions are to other people, not just myself, to other people when I'm doing things that are wrong. But all of a sudden, after he opens up my heart and my soul, I start feeling these things. I can no longer, even think about doing something that was, wrong in my life and or hurting somebody's feelings and on at least on purpose. And if I did it accidentally where I wasn't thinking, it would still bother me and I needed to go make amends. But I had to have that opening, that higher power, the cool part about that is it becomes like, when I did that, when I had that opening with my higher power, that 10th step no longer was just a night. So as he continued to build me, the ability to look at my life and to look at the things I was doing that might have been wrong, instead of having to wait all the way till the nighttime to do it, he started allowing me to have the connection through him to the people around me that allowed me to have that feeling of like, wow, why did I just do that? That wasn't good. Why would I do that to that person? Why would I say that to that person? And I'm not always saying that I instantly went over and made amends, but it was nice not to have to wait till the nighttime to make that connection with my higher power and with the fact that I needed to start making these amends. And as it was continuing this relationship with my higher power, I always say, like, it's kind of cool that he's doing it this way, I know what he's doing. He's looking down, he goes, and you're looking down, and I go, and they're going, do you think he's ready for this part of the program yet? And they're usually like, no. he's not ready for that yet. But maybe in 6 months, we'll test him out again in 6 months, because he's still pretty selfish. He's still locked into himself until he made that step. Until I turned around and said to that person, I was wrong. That opened up the door for the next part of my life. That's the crazy part. I didn't know that moment was going to change my life. And I can't tell you if I knew it was going to change my life, being a selfish, self-centered person, that I would have gone that direction. I know that with my higher power, as I'm going through the day, then what started happening is that now, I just continued this program and working the 10th step and having higher power from the 11th step and making that spiritual connection. I started to know what to do, when I'm supposed to do it. I started living in the moment. And when you live in the moment, okay, even when you're doing something like you're about to do something crazy, or you're dropping down the road, or you're maybe there was an argument with me at work, or this or that, or a car pulls out in front of you, and there used to be a time where if you pulled out in front of me, I would have had to pass that person. What I like to do back then, when I was still a crazy man, is I would pass them and go real slow in front of them now. I figured that way they knew I was irritating them, And now I'm ready to make that thought, like, oh, I'm going to show them. And before I can even do it, God's ruined it for me. He's like, he sends me this thought, like, you don't know what's going on in their lives. They could be going through something right now. You didn't know it. You don't know what's going on in their life. you know, and I catch myself before I even drop an F-bomb now. It's like, wow, that's just crazy. You know, that's not the norm. And that's happened over a period of time now where before I could even get to the thought of how I'm going to pay them back for what they did to me, I've already caught myself and started looking at, boy, I hope everything's all right in your life. I hope things are going well. And it kind of like, and I always joke about the fact that I don't know how many years it was in sobriety, I was coaching. And there was a guy named Ray that I coached with. And Ray and I coached our daughters, and we were both very competitive people in coaching. And at the end of the day, we'd leave practice, and I'd go home. And about 15 minutes after I was home, the telephone would ring. And it would be Ray. I'm like, what's up, Ray? You know, he'd be going rah, 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 about things that went on in practice or whatever was going on and parents and this and this. And I would say to him, hey, Ray, just relax. Just relax, buddy. I said, da 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 da. You okay? And he'd go, oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Good. And then he'd hang up and he'd go off. And like, he's called me every night for like 2 weeks after practice. I'm like, you know, Ray, I tell you something, buddy. Have you noticed that you call me every night 15 minutes after you get home? He goes, oh, yeah. I go, well, why are you doing that? He goes, oh, it's not my idea. My wife makes me call you. I'm like, what are you talking about? Well, I come home and I'm all negative and she says, call Dan. Call Dan. I'm like, wait, what do you mean? She goes, oh, yeah, she has a nickname for you. She calls you Silver Lining. You want to piss off a crazy alcoholic, call me Silver Lining, you know? And what it was is that God had allowed me to start seeing other aspects of not only my life, but of the things around me. And instead of jumping on and being all negative about it, I could find the positive things within different things that I never could find ever in my life. Because of working that 10 step, by working that 11 step, I have allowing that spiritual contact on an everyday basis. But I can tell you right now, when they first started calling me Silver Lining, I didn't like that at all. You know, when you're a country boy from Ridgeway, you don't get called Silver Lining. You know, you might want to call me, you know, like Ass Kicker or something like that, whatever, but not Silver Lining. So those kind of things started happening in my life. I started noticing things like that. And I said to my wife about that situation, I said, you know what they said? And she said, well, you kind of are, you know, you kind of do that. You're kind of like, you seem to be able to find positive things. And that's just a result of a higher power. I did not understand what the development of these steps were going to do to me in God's time, you know? I saw this. I saw one of the reasons I came back, and I didn't understand it then. One of the reasons I stayed sober early in sobriety when I didn't really care about the steps, didn't care about your people, that there was enough people in here that led by power of examples. And I saw 10, 11, and 12 working in their life. You know, the Gene Acres and the Obies and all the guys down in the club that just took me to the side and you know, talked to me normally, you know, that saved my life. You know, the Gene Acres who told me who that, you know, even though you're hyper, you know, and all everybody's telling you to slow down, that it's all right to be hyper. It's all right to be who you are. How do they know that's not who you are? And guess what? Like I've said before, 36 years later, I'm still Dan and I'm still hyper. Okay? That is who I am. I'm all right with being who I was. I was never all right who I was my entire life. From the time I was a little kid to the time I got this fellowship and even early sobriety, I really did not care who I was. So I'm so grateful that I had that spiritual awakening. You know? And as that goes, as that spiritual awakening goes and you're starting to change, you will find, at least I did, that you'll get to a point in your sobriety, you know, where you think this is all there is. During my spiritual journey, you know, my wife would get up every Sunday and take my kids to church. You know, but I didn't go to church. You know, I'd gone. You know, I'd like, okay, my Sunday morning meeting at 11 o'clock. That's my home group. That's my church. And she said, "Hey, why don't you can you go?" And I'm like, "No." I said, "You don't get out of church until like 11 o'clock. My meeting's already started." No. And during our 10th or 11th year in sobriety, I can remember my brother-in-law, who was kind of the lawyer in town. He's kind of like, you know, like very, very, you know, and you know, he went to this retreat. And we just happened when he came back up on the Sunday after the Catholic retreat they had, the Crucial, he came home. He said, he comes back and we were at his house. And I guess the idea is that you want to get more people to go. And so he comes walking up to me and he says, "Dan, would you like to make a Crucial?" And before he could even finish the line, I said, "Absolutely." He shook his head. He's like, whoa. That was too easy. You know, what did this? See, because of this fellowship, because of my higher power, because of my ability to feel, I saw a different person that saw go to that came back. By his aura of peace and serenity and that spiritual thing that he came back with, I thought, I think I'm supposed to go to that. You know, there are different aspects. I would never go to anything like that before. I'm going to tell you right now, you know, for those who have did, you know, and it's, everybody has their own different worlds and different beliefs. Mine is still all spiritual. It's not locked into one direction like that. But I can go there and I can feel. And that weekend, see, I thought by that point in my life that I had cleared up all that stuff in my life. I didn't know that there was that God had a spiritual moment for me while I would be there that weekend that would change my life. Did not know that. You know, I had a moment there where I felt the direct contact of my higher power with me during a period of time in which I knew at that moment that I was truly forgiven for all the things I had done in my life. I mean, I'd worked the steps on them. I'd done all these different things. Like, I felt pretty good about who I was. I felt that relationship with my higher power. But I forgave other people for the things that they did when I worked them. But I never forgave myself. And during that weekend, I forgave myself. And by doing that, it opened up another spiritual realm that I didn't even understand. These are the kind of things that happen in the fellowship if you don't pick up that drink. If you give yourself a chance to start developing that relationship with your higher power. It seems like every time that I think, I'm like, "Oh my God, this is so cool. I'll take this. This is great." And he goes, "Oh, no. I got something more for you." And from there, that spiritualism that I got in there, I was able not only to take it out to my family, to my people in the fellowship, you know, to my sponsees or to whoever, I'm able to take it out to the rest of the world. I'm able to feel that connection that I never thought I'd ever feel again in my life from the time I was a little kid. But he's done it in a slow pattern for me. You know, if you'd have said to me, "Oh, Dan, he's not going to give you that until you've been 30 years, you know, sober for 25 years, or you're not going to get it," you know, I'm gonna be like, "Oh, then screw it, I don't want it. You know, I want it now. I'm an alcoholic. I want it now." And I believe that God knows that if He gives it to me 1 second earlier than He does, I might not get it. I might not feel it. I might not understand it. So that's how my spiritual thing goes. I'm truly thinking I'm in progress. You know, and then as I go into the 12th step and having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, to carry this message to alcoholics and practicing principles all my affairs. Oh my God. You know, I talked about early in sobriety before I started working with other people or even caring about other people. I would, you know, if a guy would, like in my first 4 or 5 years and I was sponsoring people, like I would really wasn't sponsoring. Back then, they get you. There was always a group and it was like, oh, hey, I need a sponsor. You want to be my sponsor? Like, sure. And it really was a sponsor in the name of a ride to the meeting. It really wasn't about developing a relationship with a sponsor, sponsee. And then I didn't understand that why. Well, I back then blamed it on them. On the guys who were going to be sponsees or the guys who want, you know, that were doing this. And I didn't understand. It was happening that way because I wasn't spiritually fit. I wasn't open to my spiritual, you know, to my higher power. And so the people that I was drawing near me that wanted to be sponsees were people that were just like me, just like I was. And because that's the way it was, there was no real relationship. It was two people identical, both all about self, and their self was a ride to the meeting. Can I get a paper sign? Well, I had to go to the meeting, so I'd pick them up. It's amazing after having that first spiritual awakening, that Mount Laurel moment, I come back and I start seeing people differently. Guess what? People started seeing me differently. You know, they started looking at my, I thought it was me just seeing them. I found out later, they could see me for the first time. You know, what a change. I didn't know it was even going to occur. And because of that, when somebody would come up to me and say, "Dan, you know, I really would like you to be my sponsor. Like, hey, can you talk to me after the meeting? I really would appreciate if we could have a conversation. You know, would you be part of our lives?" And that happened because, you know, they could see the things that were inside of me. I can remember some of the guys. You know, I was reading in here, and it was used to be guys that would tell me that what I was doing. You know, like. One of the things in sponsorship, it was my whole family. You know, those who know me and have been around here know that probably over the years we've had probably six different guys live in our house from the program. You know, and at first I had a guy come to me and said, "You know, you really shouldn't do that." You know, they go, "Why not?" And he goes, "Well, you know, it's you know." And I'm like, and I looked at him one day and I said, Did you read the big book? Because sometimes people always say, "Well, we're not this and we're not that. We're not this. We're not that." You know, read the big book. Read the steps. Yeah, what did they do? How did they treat people? What were they willing to do to help a newcomer? You know, I knew that what I was going to do, maybe not every guy was going to stay sober. But it was going to change me and who and how I treated people and how I looked at people. And it was also going to change my family. You know, I'll tell you what's tough is when you've been sponsoring, you know, like you sponsored some guys. Some of you guys might remember a guy named Chuck. Chucky B. And Chucky B was bomb in a barrel, like just did one of his famous Chucky stories. Was that he lived in the projects, and during this day, he had an important meeting downtown, some administrator or police or whoever it was, and he ran to the bus stop because he realized he was late. And the bus driver said to Chucky, "Chucky, I like you, Chucky, but you can't get on the bus in just your underwear." Yeah, and Chucky looks down and realizes he ran out of the house in his underwear, you know. And so this is where, and I'm going to tell you right now, I got to watch, not only is it a power example for the program, but here, I got to watch this person that came from down there. He came from where people told him he had already been in the different rehabs and in the psych wards. Him and a guy named Brooklyn, he had a competition. They both had somewhere over 50 times. And Chucky got sober and went back to school and used to come down to my house in the basement. And while we make supper, he'd be down there studying. I would tutor him. My wife would tutor him. And he went from there to being in charge of a group home. You know, he changed his life and he had this wonderful life and he was doing all the right things and going Cook's Forest with us and doing all these things. But see, and then he got married. He had a number of years of sobriety, and about 5 or 6 years of sobriety, Chucky stopped going to as many meetings because, you know, I'd stop at his house and say, you know, guess what? I have a great life. I have a great life. I've got a great job. I'm married. I'm going here. This program's really worked, but I'm not going to make as many meetings now. It's not about just making the meetings. It's about being there for other people, like people who have been there for you. You know, and I understand that today. You know, one of the things, and guess what? That guy, he lived in my house for probably 6 months to a year. He was part of my family. My kids called him Uncle Chucky. You know, he did all these things. I was his best man at his wedding. But then he let the program, the things it gave him, take away from his life. He didn't no longer wasn't going to meetings as often. I'd stop down at his house about every couple of months, like, hey, you got to go to meetings. You got to help people. You got to continue to work the steps. You got to be a part of it. And 9 years in sobriety, he decided to have surgery down in Pittsburgh, the stomach staple. And I went down and visited him, and they gave him painkillers. They gave him pain stuff. And I looked at my wife on the way out the door, and I said, he's done. And my wife goes, what are you talking about? I said, he's done. Gollum, the creature, is back. I can see it in his eyes. And she's like, oh, come on. Yeah, he came back, and you know, this man had gone there and helped all these people, done all these wonderful things, because he didn't continue to work the steps, because he didn't continue through 10, 11, and 12. You know, went back out and spent his 50th birthday in a maximum security prison. And within 2 years after getting out of prison, they found him on a park bench in a coma. You know, and 2 weeks after that, he passed away. You know, I look at that and it reminds me the fact that it doesn't matter how much time you have in this program, that if you're not going to continue to work 10, 11, and 12, if you're not going to continue to be at the meetings and helping the other newcomers, if you're hiding right now in a room with everybody in that room, got a bunch of time, you go, oh, I love that meeting. I did that before. I love that meeting. But you're not there, and you're not around the newcomers when they come in the program. You're not there to see and remember what it was like to feel that. That's why it's such an important factor of my life of going to different places where newcomers are. To get myself, even though I don't want to go down to the club sometimes, I go down to the club during even with a pandemic on a couple of days a week, because I want to be there not only – I maybe find somebody to help. I'm going to find somebody that's going to help me to remember what I was like, to not forget. When these young people talk about the things that they're going through, it takes me back to that moment. So when I'm working, you know, steps 10, 11, and 12, and listening to that life that I have today is just amazing. I get to feel the things that people are going through. Does it guarantee that every day is going to be perfect? No, but to be able to have the ability to look at what I do in my life and go, wow, you're not on the right path, Dan. Oh, what a gift that is! I used to walk a long way down the wrong path, and then I don't know about you. once I started walking down the wrong path, I couldn't turn around. It was kind of like a vacation I took my family on before we had GPS. And I was somewhere in Connecticut and I took a wrong turn. And about 10 miles into that wrong turn, I knew it was the wrong turn. But what I did when I realized it was the wrong turn, I go, oh, look at that house over there. That's from the 1800s, you know? You know, I can't admit to my children that I made the wrong turn. So I turned it in. I turned it into like a oh, hey, that's 1785 right there. Look at that, you know? That's why. And I knew eventually I was going to hit back onto the road. I lost an extra hour of the trip. But the fact is that's kind of like how my life was. I used to take the wrong turn and keep going down it and never admitting it was the wrong turn, you know, and didn't care who it hurt, and didn't care how it affected other people's lives, you know. I would hold on to that and find a reason why it was all right. And because I'm able to do 10, 11, 12 on a daily basis, you know, that's part of my life, that because of that, I'm able to have that ability to turn around even to my own children, to my wife, to my friends. You know, it's not easy making amends to your friends. You know, when you say something, maybe you shouldn't have said it, you said it the wrong way, or you gave them a look, and then you realize later you do it. But I know that if I don't, that begins a series of compromises that takes me back out. And I don't want to live that life. So that's the end of 10, 11, and 12 for me. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
It's a beautiful night out there.
Hey, Kevin, can you hear me?
You're on mute, Kev.
I can hear you, Greg. So can everybody hear us?
Yes.
Okay.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
They can hear you.
They can hear you fine. Greg, they can hear you, so ask your questions. Okay, where did he go? I guess he went away. Okay, so I guess we know that this is the question and answer part of the meeting. So is there anybody that has a question for Dan on step 10, 11, or 12?
Hi, I'm Rena, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Rena.
My question is, when you were talking about, like when somebody cut you off in traffic, how you just naturally, you know, weren't that upset about it and had different thoughts about it than before. I really noticed that in my sobriety, that some of these things just start to happen naturally without me even having to work on it. And I just wondered how that happens.
Well, like for me, a lot of you guys know, and people who used to go to AM Sober, they know, Maury always had, like, would listen to my story about in my car. what I did is I created a mental stealth button in my car. And I would drive down the road and somebody pulled out in front of me or did something like this. I would reach up and onto my dash and I go, oh, I had my stealth on. And when I do that, it automatically would make me kind of laugh at myself before, and it would displace my anger. I can remember I'm a behavior counselor. I was driving one of my clients around one day. I was going up P Street, and this guy pulled out right in front of me. I went, oh, I had my stealth button. My stealth was on. And he goes, oh, Mr. Lakovich, that is so cool. You have stealth? I'm like, no. No, I do not have stealth. And then he laughed at himself. But the fact is, I have to do some things to show myself how ridiculous. You know, but just hitting that little stealth button. So Maury actually made me a bunch of buttons that I put in my different vehicles, and I've given away a bunch of them that he gave me. their little stealth button. So anytime somebody pulls out in front of you, you hit the stealth button. You know what, though, I can tell you right now, every once I get upset, I'll be driving on the road with my wife, and a car pulls out in front of me, and she pushes it before I get there. I'm like, hey, get your own button, you know? So, yeah, I have to find some humor. There's nothing I can do about it. It's not going to help anything. So, thanks.
Who else has a question for Dan?
Hi, I'm Helen. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Helen.
Hi, Dan. Great talk on the 10th, 11th, and 12th. And I just want to make one comment before I ask my question. It was a lot nicer, I think, that they called you Silver Lining instead of calling you Pollyanna. You know,
yeah.
Probably really would have ticked you off. So
that would have been a fight.
I did have a 10th step experience in school also. Mine involved a student and making my amends in front of a class, but yours, you know, of course, was with other faculty. And I got to thinking when you were talking about that, do you think that because we've taken this 10th step and we have to admit as promptly as we possibly can that we're wrong, it helps with that 7th step and having those character defects removed?
Yeah, I absolutely do. I think that within the 10th step are the 6th and 7th, you know, in that whole relationship it goes, that everything, one through 9 are all part of the 10, 11, 12 for me. Because I know that some people go, I take 1, 2, 3 every day. I said, and they go, oh, you only take 10, 11, and 12? You don't take 1, 2, 3? I'm like, in my 10th, 11th, and 12th, 1, 2, 3 are in it. You know, 1, 2, 3 are part of it. And I really think that, as I start making those amends, those things and the true looking at the things that I found and ask God for help and step 7 were there. I didn't understand it at first. It wasn't until I did 10 that I looked back and saw how that, wow, he's been with me the whole time. You know, after I had that spiritual awakening, he's been with me the whole time. When I had that spiritual awakening, every miracle from the time I was a little kid that happened in my life all flashed back to me that I never knew were miracles because I didn't understand it. I didn't understand his connection to that moment. And then I look through it, you know, and I go, wow, this is amazing. And that's what happens when we continue to work the steps on a daily basis. But I also know that it's so easy to get away from it. Just to go, well, hey, I got a great life. I don't really need this, you know. And I'm going to tell you right now, I don't know how you guys are. I go away from from you people and from my higher power, man. I can go back quickly to the person I was before. So I think I'll stay.
Thanks, Dan.
Who's next with a question for Dan?
I have a question. Hi, Dan. Thank you, Leslie Alcoholic, and thank you. That was. I so enjoyed hearing you talk about how the steps worked in your life, but I know you and I know you are like a high energy kind of guy, which sounds much more polite than saying hyper, right? Or you are a high energy person. You move, you do your physical and all of that. But what I'm wondering is this, as you've made your way through the steps, have you been able to develop any like daily or routine, almost discipline of giving yourself some quiet time with your higher power? If so, does that help you? How does that work for you?
Thanks, Leslie. The fact is, I'll be honest, I don't go to a moment today and go, oh, I'm going to go over by myself. Like, you know, a lot of you guys have been out to my house before, maybe, and been down through my woods. You know, it's kind of like the description, my wife put it pretty amazing to me one time. She said, my wife would watch me out in my yard splitting wood. And she would sit there and just watch me from the deck with this giant smile on my face. This peace and serenity look while sweat was rolling down off me and an axe was swinging. See, today what God has given me is every moment. You know, I didn't understand that that was going to happen. I really didn't. I thought that it was going to be, do I have moments where when I'm walking down through like a river valley or my woods that I don't feel like at that moment go, wow. You know, what I really like is when I'm walking down through the woods holding my wife's hands and we both turn our head at the same time and go, wow. That's the connection that happened with my higher power, that we have these same feelings and it's this connection that's amazing. But if you had told me 10 years ago that was going to happen or 15 years ago that was going to happen, I would have said, no. This is good enough. So, yeah, I have those moments. But I believe that I can have those moments almost in every moment of my life if I choose to. You know, I can find and when I'm in the moment, that's when I feel like I'm right where I belong. And for so long, I was never in the moment. I was never where I was supposed to be when I was supposed to be there. Thanks.
I have one more question, okay. If you don't mind. So and that's fine as you're ongoing, and that's how you connect generally. But, you know, then life gives us moments of agitation or upset or bad news. And I was wondering then, I mean, you can't wait for the moment to hit you, or I can't. Is there something that you do then or something that you've learned in the program to help you face some of those unexpected things that, and I don't mean like getting cut off in traffic or doing stuff like that. I mean like real stuff.
Okay. Well, let me just tell you, a lot of you guys know that I have some properties on Myrtle Beach and a little more than a couple of years ago, we found a bunch of damage in our properties down there and we were going to have to fork out a large amount of money and dealing with like 11 other homeowners, it was torture. But I was like, okay, just one thing at a time, we'll deal with it. And we finally forked it out and ended up getting a contractor to come in, and we were about 1 month from being finished. And I remember it was a Thursday night, and I was leaving the Elkanon Club about 8:30, and I walk out to my car, I hadn't checked my emails for a little while, so I got out of the car after the meeting was over, and I was checking my emails. And there was an email that said, your building's on fire. And I shook my head and went, what? It said, your building's on fire. And so I instantly called somebody I knew to call. And the crazy part about it was, my first thing that I said, was there anybody hurt? Is everybody all right? Because see, a building can be replaced. People in the situations can't. And later on, somebody said, wow, you just lost your place that you love. I said, yeah, but I didn't lose anybody else. I can deal with that. And that's what's happened to me within this fellowship. That those kind of things do happen, people have passed away. I lost my a best friend from suicide, when I went there with his family, I felt the loss of him, but I knew that my support of them was the most important thing that I could do. So that's what to me that the kind of things that make me feel like I'm right where I belong is when I'm doing the right thing that God wants me to do at that moment. I feel a lot, even in crazy times, I can feel a level of contentment and peace. And that's it.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Dan. I know that we all appreciate how much time and effort you've put into sharing the steps with us over the last several weeks. I see lots of people clapping. We certainly have benefited greatly from your experience. So thanks again.
Thank you.